At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
On this episode of Two Dudes, One Cart, I sit down with the birthday boy, Mr. Bob Kitchen of Maple Hill Golf. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Two Dudes, One Cart podcast with Mr. Bob Kitchen of Maple Hill Golf. And as always, thank you for listening. Well, everybody, we've got Mr. Kitchen back with us, and we can all wish him a nice little happy birthday today.
Thank you,
Bob.
Thanks.
What are you? I mean, what are you turning 30 today?
Yeah, 30 plus 17. So, yeah, 47. I made it. I think when I was young, I was like 47. I'll never see that. But now that I'm here, I'm like, yeah, this is. I still feel kind of young. I mean, I got the aches like everybody else, but all in all, I feel pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I've surpassed that, but I think that I don't think of it that way. You know, I got friends that are always like, "Oh man, I'm getting older. I can't do this and I can't do that." And I'm like, "Well, that's why you can't do this and you can't do that. You keep saying you can't do it. I still go out and do the same crap I did before."
Yeah.
You know, there may be bigger consequences to some of it, but still.
Yeah, exactly. Completely agreed. And thank you.
Yep. So I have a few questions. So we'll see how these go. Some of them I think we've touched on, but they're just so reoccurring. And this I tee this one up because it's your birthday. Wedge shaft weight and ball flight. Now I would have maybe not have done this, but I've got this reoccurring, and it's from some guys that are a couple guys that I know that are like plus fours.
Yeah.
And what they're getting at, obviously, is they want to bring their both really, really high. They hit the ball really high, and they want to bring that down.
That's why they're plus fours, because they hit it high.
If you watch
the pros, they all hit it to the moon. I mean, to the moon.
Well, they were wondering how much. I don't know if there's a math formula to that, but if you go to,
there probably is.
So if you go from 120 and you want to go to a 135,
yeah,
are you going to see a substantial difference, you think?
You put that word substantial in there, which made it a harder question to answer.
Right.
But you'll see a difference. Substantial, I still think that the lie and the ball that you're playing and the ground you're hitting off of and ball position has a much more substantial impact than what the weight of the shaft does. All things created equal, the exact same lie, exact same ball, exact same conditions. A heavier shaft hits it lower, period, no matter what it is. Driver, iron, wedge, doesn't really matter. Putter's the only thing that doesn't.
Right.
It's always pretty low. But, yeah, when you go up in weight, you go down in launch. And some people, it's still so misunderstood, you know, like, I had another guy's real quick tangent. A guy today asked me about hey, if I play like a Chrome Tour low spin, you know, the LS, the triple diamond or something, is that comparable to like a Titleist velocity as far as spin goes? And I'm like, hell no, no. The tour caliber balls that are urethane still spin a lot. It's called LS because it has less spin. It's low spin comparatively speaking, but it's not low spin. Like if you're a bad golfer, you don't need any urethane golf ball. You need something that's legitimately low spin, like a Sirlin distance ball. And so these guys that I want to drop my ball flight on my wedge. Well, these guys are plus fours you're talking about, right? And they're already so they're already really, really good. So if they drop their ball flight on their wedge, are they going to be plus fives? Probably not. So does it matter? Probably to them. Is it going to help them shoot lower scores? Probably not. So, I mean, there's we've said it before, there's no magic wand. So, does the heavier shaft drop ball flight? Yep. Does it help you shoot lower scores? Nope.
Since you brought it up, I did have another one, and I know we've touched on this before, but a higher handicap guy. Oh God, I might have to look at the question. Basically, it was playing what wedges in a soft, like where he plays that. It's a lot. It's like a damp. It's always kind of soft. So he has a little bit trouble with wedges around the greens and constantly kind of, not so much chunking so much, but just, it's like he just said, I just cut right through it and almost go underneath the ball because the turf's so soft. And a lot of that's going to be in how you're presenting the ball. But he was asking, I told him he might look at those CBX wedges or something like that with a bigger
They're going to be
sole.
called CBZ very soon. There's a new one coming. So, yeah, cavity back wedge of some sort, some of the wider sole with a more cambered sole, more rounded sole. Anything in a cavity back type of style or a V cut sole like what Cleveland Srixon uses, like that's an intelligent design. The more bounce you can use, the less likely it is to dig in. So I would always suggest anybody, that just use the most bounce you can because the bounce is your friend. It makes the club more forgiving and makes the ball perform better for a wider range of people.
Bob, when do you tell a customer that it's not the arrow?
Once they've kind of maximized what they have. So like we had a guy in the other day with an R5 driver, right? TaylorMade R5, so that's 20 years old. So that we can improve on that. And then you got a guy that's got last year's Cobra Dark Speed and he's asking about Dark Speed Adapt because it's now got 33 settings. And I'm like, dude, if what you had was old and crappy, it'd be pretty obvious to get the new one. But like you have last year's. So like how much better can it be? I mean, if this year's didn't exist, the world would still spin. The players on tour would just have to use last year's and still be probably pretty damn good with it. So as long as they're within the right realm and they're in the right, as long as they're on the right street, as I always like to say, like if you got a guy, I had a guy the other day, it was a higher handicapper and yeah, I'm playing 923 forged. I'm like, well, what do you shoot? He's like, I'm a 16. I'm like, okay, well, I play 925 hot metals and I'm a 10. So you're worse than I am, and you're playing a club that's considerably harder to hit than what I am. So maybe you want to consider going to something a little easier to hit. Like golf's hard. I've said that 1,000 times too. Golf's hard. It's hard. It's really hard. But making it harder just never made sense to me. Watched really good players play with very forgiving golf clubs and have great success. So it's not that good players have to use blades or have to use forged cavity backs or hollow construction or any of that kind of thing. A good player will make anything work, it really will.
What do you think? This isn't one of my questions, but where do you think we have to get, or what do you think manufacturers are gonna need to do to give players the idea when they look down at that club that they are playing a blade, but they're not? You think that's where we're gonna have to get? Like 790 is getting pretty damn close. That
Yeah,
top line's
790,
getting pretty thin.
770. Yep, and Ping's got a few, and Cobra's got one, and Callaway's got the Apex, and there's a lot of them. And Titleist now, T250, T150. So everyone wants to look cool. Everyone wants to have that appearance of the look what I'm using. I can hit a blade. Yeah, you can. You're not gonna whiff, but are we trying to shoot low scores or not? They got to shave that top line thin, keep the golf club hollow to give it as much perimeter weighting as possible. Then they usually have to fill that in with some weight, which is going to be tungsten weights in the sole. So I think we're kind of there. I mean, they're going to have to come up with a cost-effective new material that at some point in time can change the game. Or they're using graphite faces on drivers now. Maybe they're going to use a graphite face on iron someday. I don't know, or carbon composite or whatever you want to call it. It's a carbon graphite. It's kind of the same word. We'll see. They have to figure out a way to make it more flexible and
I
but it
just
has to be
think
cost effective, so
I think that that's like for a lot of people, that is going to be the only way that you're going to get them to go to a more forgiving iron. I played golf this weekend with a guy that's hits the ball an absolute mile, and he's playing T350s. And I'm like, my God, man, you should, I don't think you should be hitting those T350s. I mean, it feels like you're going to hit your four iron like 400 yards. I mean, like he's just mashing it. Like
What
it,
did he shoot?
he shoots pretty regularly in the 70s,
Okay.
but it's like when he hits the, I'm like, I don't even know what club to hit. You know, I'm like, my God, you're just going to, you know, I mean, you're getting so much. I mean, he can hit it anywhere on the face, and he's still going to get the same yardage. But I mean, he's just, I kid you not, I'm going to put him on a launch monitor, and I think he's gets his four iron out there like 250 with a four
Wow.
iron. Like he's got some speed. It's crazy. Now he hits some bad shots here and there, but I'm like, my God, he's like, I just love him. I said, well, I'll just shut up, dude. I don't know. It just seems that's crazy that you're hitting that far. But
Well, if he scored how he wants, he's hitting how he wants, it's hard to argue with it. You know, I told you before, I walked 18 holes with Kenny Perry years ago when he was playing normal TaylorMade R7 irons, which is like the equivalent of today's QI iron, like the normal Joe Blow model. And I
right.
watched the guy shoot like 67 and he hit every shot great. So like, how are you gonna argue? Like, well, you're Kenny Perry, hey, you should be playing R7 TPs or the TaylorMade Rack Forged or whatever they were, TPMBs, whatever they were called at the time. You should be playing, well, apparently not, because he had just watched him shoot 67, beat the crap out of everybody in the on the field, and they work for him. So how can you argue that? Like, hard to argue it.
Yeah, and then I watched him. I watched him sit there and work the ball, nice draw, and you know, and everybody always says, "Well, you can't work the ball with those clubs." And I'm like, I'm gonna tell you, I see plenty of people hitting cuts and draws and whatever they want with the, no matter how big that cavity is on the back. But
Completely agreed. You can still turn it right and left if you need to. If you know what you're doing, you can hold your hands in a position where you can still hook it and slice it on demand. A non-offset or reduced offset club, you can do more so, but I think more people would benefit from hitting a straight shot than knowing how to turn the ball on demand. Like,
right.
you're just not good enough, dude. I know it's fun and it's cool to impress your friends. I'm gonna bend this one left or hook this one around left and bend this next one right. Like, sounds good. Good luck actually pulling it off.
Yeah, he's got a really end out path. There's like no, that thing, it's every one of his clubs of, you know, what
Hitting a
he,
sling draw.
yeah.
Yeah. That's why he's smashing it, though, too. Is he a hockey guy or no?
No. Well, not that I know of. I guess I probably should ask him instead of saying no, but I don't believe so. I
He
thought
might have been a
more,
hockey guy
yeah, hockey guy or maybe a
or
tennis
tennis.
guy. Yeah,
Usually
tennis.
hockey, though. If he's hitting it that hard, he's usually a hockey guy.
So, Bob, how do we get golfers to stop trying to buy a game and get them to start buying into being on the lesson tee?
How do we kill the male ego?
Well, I'm not going to say I'm above that because,
That's gonna be a lot colder day than today,
yeah,
Stevie.
this is probably the first year I really ever dug down into, you know, finding a golf coach and getting some lessons, and it's pretty beneficial. It's very cost
Yeah,
effective, I can tell you that.
absolutely, absolutely. And if you want to really lose weight, you got to really watch what you eat and go to the gym and hire a nutritionist, right? Or you can take the shot, which plenty of my friends have taken the shot, and it helps, no doubt about it. Most of them kept the weight off. It's still pretty new. That whole world is kind of new still, in my opinion. So I mean, like, everybody wants a quick fix. Everybody wants to just buy the cure, and they're it's just really, really hard to come to grips with that. And the other thing that I think is hard to come to grips with is that, like, what if me personally, when I go out and play golf, I am just strictly playing to have fun. And sucking isn't fun. I understand that. But when I'm out with my buddies, like, if I shoot 82 or 86 or 78, they don't really care. So why should I care that much? And I'm not that good. I don't practice that much. I don't play competitively. So if I'm out there to enjoy my friend's company, then just go out there and enjoy your friend's company. Like, if you're out there to shoot trying to break 80 every single time you play, you better practice some. You better really try quite a bit, and maybe equipment can help you to a point. Maybe you're killing yourself, you know, playing blades or whatever we were just talking about. Like, you need something a little more forgiving, dude. You're just not that good, or so you have to just be honest with your expectations and keep it a little grounded and go out and accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. And for me personally, that's have two or three beers and have fun with my friends for 4 hours. And I do that on a pretty regular basis. And we get competitive, and we played a little 2-of-4 on Friday, and it was an absolute freaking blast of my buddies, 4-on-4, 2-of-4, 20-20-20. And my team ended up winning, which makes it a little more fun. That's it. I'm just out there to have fun with my buddies, and we're only playing 2-of-4, so not every score counts anyhow. So little pressure off. All birdies counted though, which helped. And yeah, it's just fun. So that's my goal. So I don't know what your personal goal is. If you're out there trying to shoot the lowest score in the world, or enjoy your family or friends or whatever, it's good
Yeah, I
just to
mean,
get out of the house sometimes. Or not working sometimes.
I like it both. I mean, I've been playing in a lot of tournaments this year. But at the same time, I love just getting out and just
Yeah.
swinging it with the guys and having a good time. And
So when you're in a tournament, are you signing up with the anticipation or the expectation or the hope to win it? Or just to compete and not make a fool of yourself?
I'd like to say that I just want to go out there and compete and see what I can do that day, but I think that's probably a lie that when any time I put a tee on the peg in a tournament, I want to win. I
Yeah,
mean, I go out there, I
right.
want to win, and
That's
that's just how I'm wired.
I don't know if ego is the right word, but that's the male drive, just being a competitor, right? And I think that Tiger and Jack did that better than anybody. We've talked about that before too. Like they wanted to kill everybody every single time they teed it up, and I think that that's very true. I'm not sure that a lot of people have had the killer instinct that those two have had, because you can kind of see it. It's different, right? And Jordan, it was different. And Kobe, it was different, right? These guys are different. And good for them. And that's great. And they were all the best at what they did. But and when I played in tournaments, I was about the same as you. Like, I wanted to go out and do the absolute best I could, and I knew that I probably couldn't beat number one on our team was Jason. I probably couldn't beat Jason, but damn it, I'm gonna try. I'm gonna go after him. I'm gonna give it all I got. And then as time went on, and I got married, had two kids, and the business grew and all those things. Like, the what I got out of golf and what I enjoyed out of golf just completely transformed. But then once I had two sons and they started playing a little bit, like, it's just, I'd rather go play golf with them than pretty much anything else in the world. So, and if I shoot 92 or 82, they love me the same and I love them the same. And just trying to help them a little bit with your chipping, hold your hands here, or ball position or swing path, or get your hands squared up or whatever. Those little things, like, that's great. If they get a little bit better from what I can help them with, wonderful. If not, we still had fun and we were out there for 2 to 4 hours, with my boys.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that I really enjoy it. I love the, idea of going out there and knowing you're going to play a tournament, and you're playing by the rules, and
Bring your A game. Yeah,
yeah, you're
it's the
playing with
real, it's real golf.
a bunch of different guys. You meet a lot of different people, and
Lot of them
I just,
wonderful, right? And
yep.
different walks of life and different backgrounds and stories. And that's the beauty of it, right? We've talked about that too, right? How beautiful the sport is.
So, Bob, when do you know to say no in the golf business?
To what?
Well, to anything. It's a little extreme in your line of work, or especially with what you guys do at Maple Hill.
Yeah.
Obviously, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them when it comes
Yeah.
to buying bulk.
Yeah.
I'm sure I don't know if you turn down bringing any brands in, but when do you sit there and go, this it doesn't feel right, doesn't
Yeah.
smell right, or
Yeah. Yeah.
isn't
Yeah.
beneficial?
That's a good question. Because you can't be everything to everybody, right? Like, you just can't. The
Impossible.
internet is kind of everybody, everything to everybody, and we can't control the entire golf internet, so I'm not going to try to. So let's just try to do what we do the best, and let's try to improve on our weak spots and kind of play to our strengths, and that's kind of what it is. So when do you know when? Man, that's a hell of a question. You got to really know what you're doing. I mean, you got to be really hands-on. You got to be ultra engaged. You got to know your customer and your marketplace too. Like, there's the only thing we really say no to as far as brands goes, to get into what you just said there, is like apparel companies. There's so many apparel companies, and there's 10 trillion of them, and they're all like, oh, you know, our apparel is the best, this, and we got these great shorts, and look at this material, look at that. Like, it's clothing, dude. You wear it. Like, it's just not that much different. Oh, but I love FootJoy shirts. Oh, but I love Puma shorts, and I love this and that. And like, okay, everybody's got a different opinion. Women's apparel is even worse. It's incredible how many women's brands there are. Because no, you know, nobody thinks that the other company's quite doing it right. So we're gonna fix the apparel. Women's, holy moly! Thank God I don't do that anymore. As far as for Maple Hill. So yeah, and then like today, one of the major putter companies came to me, and they have 30,000 head covers left over from last year. 30, or not last year, from last year and before, right? And I'm like, dude, 30,000? Who in the hell made this call? Like, how did this happen? You got to be kidding me. So yeah, like, how many should we buy? How many should we not? So I'm literally rounding up the answers to my team right now as to who thinks we should buy what. Because there's like 12 different styles, you know, 12 different SKUs between color and blade, mallet, or wide blade. Holy moly. I'm like, who ordered all these? Talking to my sales rep today. I'm like, who on God's, I hope somebody lost their job. This is a ton of money. Even if they're $5 a piece, you know, that's $150,000, dude. That is a ton of money to be sitting around stagnant. There's no putters for them. It's excess inventory. So when's enough? Like, that's enough. I could tell you that. If it was 2 or 3 thousand, no problem. 30,000? You'll have them. I mean, I'll be buried with them. My casket will be lined in putter covers because I'm gonna have them for the rest of eternity. But I mean, if you can buy them for $3 and sell them for 10, or buy them for three and sell them for 15, great. You can, I mean, you don't need to sell that many of them to get your money back, and then the rest of it's just all profit. You can just about give them away at that point. So hard to tell.
Yeah, I can't. I didn't think it was going to be an easy question. It's kind of hard to sit there and look at it with, if somebody comes to you with something that seems like a really good deal, and then you go to the team, and then somebody's going to be like, "Well, we tried that back in this." I just didn't know how that went around,
Yeah.
especially because you got it's really extreme for you guys because you're buying in such large quantities, and
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
know you enough now that I can just imagine the internal calculator is going click, 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 click,
Oh,
click.
yeah.
You're typing in all these numbers and go, wait a minute, I'm gonna have to
Yeah.
sell these for X, and I may only make $20 a piece if I try to do this, and that's
Yes.
never gonna work.
And making $20 a piece on a driver isn't very good, but making $20 a piece on a shoes isn't too bad. You know, if
Right.
you bought them for 20 and sell them for 40, or bought them for 30 and sell them for 50, you can survive on that. But it depends on what it is and how long it's gonna. Because what I think the most common mistake is, and I think that this is true for humans in general, and I don't just mean in the golf business, I mean in anything, like a relationship or buying something, or anybody that has a job, they think about how good it's going to start, and nobody ever thinks about if I do this, what's it going to look like at the end. I think everybody has that short vision where they can see, and so I try to look at it backwards. Like, when I buy a putter cover like this thing, like, what's the cheapest I'm ever going to have to sell this thing for? Probably $5. So, especially when you have 30,000 of them. So if I'm gonna have to sell them for $4.99 at some point in time, which is probably true, might be a year from now, might be 2 years from now, who knows? I can't pay more than $2 or $3 for them. I just can't. Can't. Doesn't make any sense. So, oh yeah, but you can sell them for $9.99. You know, they're on our website for $24.99. Yeah, no one's buying them. So that's why they're, congratulations. You know, I can put my house up for sale for $2 million. It's not worth that, right? Who cares? So yeah. You gotta think about how it's gonna end. And that's where we've gotten, I think pretty good over the years, is figuring out, looking at the end game and how's it gonna end and how long is it gonna take. And that's how we've improved over time.
I would really love to hear that phone conversation when the guy's trying to sell them to you and you're going, dude, you have 30,000 of these and you're trying to talk this up to me. You can't sell them. You wouldn't. Why are you getting, you're getting a hold of me to sell them and now you're trying to sell them to me at a higher price and you can't get rid of them.
And yeah, Callaway has this closeout iron on their sheet right now that has, they have over 3,000 sets, this one set of irons, and they've been on this sheet for 2 years, and it's still a purchase from on their end from the COVID boom. And I'm like, they ain't going up in value, homeboy. Like, they just aren't going up in value. And I'm trying to talk sense to the guy, and it's just really tough. He's in a bad position because the company's for sale. So there's just a lot going on, and his hands are tied. And I'm like, this, if you really was doing what's best for the company, you need to move this crap and like now, because it ain't going up in value. And I'm trying to be fair to you because I love Callaway Golf. They're a great company and they treated us wonderful over the years. But I'm like, dude, we gotta move this thing out. Like, holy moly, how long do you want to have this? It's gonna have its fifth birthday next year. Like, you shouldn't have anything for 5 years at Callaway Golf. Nothing.
How do you feel that's all going to shake out with Callaway?
So that this particular deal I'm talking about, I think they'll come to terms, but I think that they need to sell off Topgolf and to reposition Callaway Golf and or sell Callaway as well. There's a lot of things that need to take place before they actually say yes to my offer, because right now they're all concerned about profitability of the brand and all that. And I understand that. When you're publicly traded, it's just a totally different animal. Like, when I dealt with Mizuno and the big bosses from Mizuno, like, they're not publicly traded. It's really easy to deal with Mizuno. And when I deal with my buddy, Sam Bettinardi over at, you know, he owns Bettinardi, he's just him and his dad. Like, they got a ton of employees, but there's no shareholders, or they're not on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange. It's just him and his dad making decisions and moving on. There's positives and negatives to both. You know, sometimes they, like, Sam and Bob Bettinardi are such good guys. And I had to talk to him one time about something like, hey, dude, you have to kind of let go a little bit about this. Like, I understand brand protection. But you're this isn't going to embarrass you. You need to understand that. And they're like, oh yeah. So we've had some conversations, but they're open to them, and they're just good guys, and they listen well, and they're open to ideas. And he called, I think I told you on the last podcast, maybe he called me and asked me about product release dates and what they should do year two and change some colors, or, you
Oh,
know, do
yeah.
some limited edition offerings or whatever, and like what the launch pattern should look like for that. And I've been in golf my whole life, so I get it now. I understand what it takes to get the product's life cycle longer, and how you release a limited edition on year two, like what Callaway and TaylorMade do with black irons or copper irons or whatever, to just expand the life cycle of a golf club. So we just had some real good conversations like that, and it's really nice when they take your feedback or rely on me or us, because we know what we're doing. We've been at it a long time. I've seen what fails, I've seen what works, and we're a great resource to talk to. And that's why I'm on your podcast too, I think.
Right. Yeah. Not to get too far off topic here, but does it surprise you how, I wouldn't call it a flop, but how bad Topgolf has actually done? It shocks me that I don't know if it's because the prices are a little bit high. I'm not sure what it is, but golf has spent its, like we've talked with COVID and Tiger, we've had these booms. We moved up and down. We've gone a little too elite, and you know, elitist a little bit. Then we went back down a little bit. Now we're traveling back upwards again. I just It seems like a great idea, but I mean we've all seen driving ranges fail, so really
Yeah.
other you're just given beer and food at a higher price, so I don't know if it's that shocking or not.
The first time there's, I want to talk about two things with Topgolf. One is the purchase of Topgolf when that happened, and the other one is I want to talk
Right.
about my own personal experience. The first time I went to Topgolf, I was blown away at how much fun it was. I was like, this is a you've done it too, Steve, right? We talked about that. Yeah. It is fun. I mean, I don't think there's any denying that. Women, children, men, any age, no matter how good or bad you are at golf or what you even think of the sport, it's fun. It's really fun. First time I went, I think the first time I went might have been in Phoenix at that one at Talking Stick, not too far from Ping, and I went with our Ping Regional, the guy that I went to the Masters with, and he was Gene Graham, great, great human being. And I was like, wow, this is actually really good food. The beer is pretty reasonable, and the golf seems pretty cheap. Like, take this and split it, and it's pretty damn reasonable. I was impressed with every aspect of it. Second time we went was in, I don't know if it was in Cleveland or Orlando, I can't remember, Tampa. I've been to a few different ones, and I was like, this seems like it's gone up a little bit, but I felt like they kept the quality of the food, and their drink selection was pretty darn good, and I still didn't think it was that outrageous. And now the complaint is that their prices have kind of skyrocketed. I know that the price of food has skyrocketed. The price of food has skyrocketed everywhere. That's not just Topgolf. That's everywhere. And drinks are all kind of getting ridiculous. And in my opinion, I'm from West Michigan, so we're all pretty conservative here. So I don't know. I still think it's a pretty good value for what it is. What I don't understand is Chip Brewer, the guy that is the boss of Callaway Golf, the CEO, the buck stops with Chip. He had to have okayed the purchase of Topgolf for way, way more than what I think was even remotely possible for the value of it. And he's gonna, I think they're gonna lose hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion or something on the when they sell it. And like, how did I just don't, who did you talk to that said that the boom is just going to keep on going? Like, who the hell didn't know that this was going to have to, plateau off or even dip back down a little bit? Like, how do you just think everybody's going to just fall in love with this and like it's the only place they're ever going to go? That's not how humanity works. Humanity gets really into something. Like when iPhone 17 comes out, I think that's the one that just came out. Like, it's not like a year later, everybody's like, oh my God, you hear about the iPhone 17? People get excited about things and then it just kind of levels and then it goes back down. And that's true with everything. And that's not saying that people aren't, excited about having an iPhone. They are, but it's like, I think I'm on a 14 right now talking to you. And like, so I'm not that excited about getting a 17. I've been to Topgolf. Is it great? Yep, it's great. I love it. Am I super excited to go tomorrow? Not really. If it was one across the street from me, I'd probably go once a month. But I mean, kind of is what it is. It's an experience. You go for the benefit of it, the enjoyment of it. I don't know, if you thought that this boom was going to just continue on for all of eternity, I think you're crazy. And Chip is so damn smart, and I just don't get it. I don't know who in the hell, or if he benefited from it somehow behind the scenes. I don't know how all that works. But it didn't make any sense to me when I heard the numbers and what the hell their debt was on it. I'm like,
Well,
my
that
God.
and I can't wrap my mind around how much that thing costs to just be there and running all day with nobody in it. You know
Oh
what I mean? Just
yeah. Sunk costs. Yeah. Yeah.
the daily
Sunken
cost.
costs.
And then
A
they,
ton. Just before you unlock the door, right?
yeah,
It's still
I thought when
10
those
grand a
no
day or whatever.
I thought when those numbers came out, I thought, man, I don't know, because we already have, it's called Back Nine, another one that opened up, and not
Yeah.
quite as big, but
Right.
they do a lot of business there, and I'm they're right downtown Indianapolis. You got to
Yeah.
go north side of Indianapolis to go to Topgolf, but
You
I
do
don't
have a Topgolf in India, though.
know. No, just it's well, it's north side of Indianapolis.
Yeah, but it's in your town. We don't, in Grand Rapids, we don't have one. There's only one in Michigan. It's over in Pontiac, kind of north side of Detroit. And that's a little bit more wealthy point. I don't know how they're doing. I bet they're doing all right. It's open, so.
It
But like Grand
seemed.
Rapids, even as our town's not Indianapolis, it's not Detroit, but it's the second biggest city in Michigan, and we can't support it. There's no way. And we looked into what the cost of it was, and at the time, this was like 10, over 10 years ago, it was like $17 million to build one. And we're like, what year do you get that money back? Like, if you're making $1 million a year,
Jesus.
let's even say $2 million a year. It's still going to take you 9 years, dude. And after 9 years, you probably got to remodel because this year shit's probably getting old. Like, I man, oh man.
It's that was one thing I don't think I ever thought I would see is a, basically a golf business buying something that vast, that with so many locations. I didn't think I would ever that was almost a tailor-made move. You know what I mean? Really, that seems like something tailor-made would have, not so much
Egotistical.
Callaway, but
Yeah. Callaway always seemed a little more, yeah, like calculated. Yeah.
right.
Yeah, it almost seemed like maybe an egotistical move. Like, now we're the biggest golf company. We're doing $5 billion a year. I'm like, yeah, now you're losing more money than anybody else. Like, congratulations. So, you want to talk about how much money you lost at the casino too while you're at it? Like, I just don't understand bragging about losing. But they wanted to be the biggest and the best, and now you are. Now congratulations. Now you want out of it because you got a little over your skis. And I wish them the best, and I love Callaway Golf, but some of the things they've done this year and since COVID, I guess, I'm like, what? And the problem is that the product isn't the problem. That's what the problem is. They're making good stuff. They're making great stuff, as a matter of fact. And but there's it's such craziness in some particular cases, like Topgolf. It's like,
But
who said yes to this?
yeah, it feels like you overpaid for something you knew that wasn't working. It's like buying a car that wasn't running
Yeah,
in
and
a
it was
way.
like just because you wanted the car so bad.
Or a fleet. Actually, the better analogy would be you bought a fleet of cars
Yes,
that
exactly. Exactly. Like you bought a bunch of Volkswagens that have a recall, and you kind of know they have a recall, but you just want these Volkswagens so bad. You're like,
These have
damn
been
it, just give
known
me the Volkswagens. Like, well,
to catch on fire.
yeah,
Okay.
exactly. They all combust. But not my money, thank God. But my brother invested in Callaway a little bit not long ago, and he's actually made some money because their stock was so terrible. I think it was at $4, and now it's at six, and he's walking in tall cotton right now. He's so happy about his $2. I
Well,
don't know how much he put in, but he made some money, I know. So he's excited about Callaway. And if Topgolf does sell and all that, there's it'll rebound nicely. That usually helps on the
oh
stock
yeah.
market. So
What's one behind the scenes reality of running an operation like Maple Hill that may surprise our listeners? I mean, and I don't think we have two. We may have a first-time listener, but to understand that you guys have a driving range, a golf course, online business, you've got your own retail store there. You've got so many things going on. What's something that it may or may not stick out to you, but you have all these things going on. You have all this personnel working together. Is there something that people may be surprised that you have to do to keep the ship running?
What I think would be the biggest surprise if somebody stepped into my shoes and started living my life is how much lawyers are involved in my interactions and transactions with the companies. And that means like how little latitude we have with pricing. Like we on 70 to 80% of the products we sell, we can't pick the price. We can in our store. We can if you call us, if you email us. Our website, no. If we sell it on marketplaces like an Amazon or something like that, no. You have to sell it for the price they tell you. So like I think people think it's a free market and like that capitalism is what drives the golf business, and that is not true. It's not a free market. You have to follow all the company's policies, and all of them have different policies, and all of them It's like trying to keep track of 20 different, like, it's like we sell every brand of cars, right? So like we sell Audi and we sell GM and we sell, Chrysler and we sell Nissan and we sell, Lexus and Cadillac, and we sell all those, and then every one of those has 1,000 models behind that, and all those 1,000 models all come in different colors and different options on them and all those things, and it's just really hard to keep all that straight. And then you have lawyers for every one of these companies trying to remind you of what their rules are. Like I don't really know every single one of Echo's rules. You know what I mean? Do we sell Echo? Yep, we sell a lot of Echo, but like their rules are different than Puma's, they're different than FootJoy's, they're different than, all these Adidas and all these different shoe companies. It's like, dude, I know you want me to care so much about your brand, and I do care about it. I hope we sell a lot of Echo, and I hope I'm not breaking the rules, but your policy is not the first thing in my head when I'm trying to make decisions. And so, like, all these people, how much you have to keep track of that and how much you have to keep straight is just sickening, in my personal opinion. I'm like, when my dad was doing this way before my brother and I were, it was much, much easier because it was just buy it and sell it, and there was no internet and there was no MAP, which is minimum advertised price. There was no none of that. It was just free market and capitalism. And now it's like, oh, we're gonna sell this driver for $5.99. So every website is $5.99. So like, okay, so how am I supposed to compete with, if I'm selling the Callaway driver for $5.99 and Callaway's selling the driver for $5.99, why would they buy it from me? Just buy it from the company. And they have a rewards program and they have free shipping, free returns, because they're no longer wholesaling the product. So if it's selling for $5.99, that means I'm buying it for sub 500. Probably not a lot under 500, but sub 500. So they can afford, they're no longer wholesaling it for, call it 480. They're no longer, now they're selling it for 600 direct to Steve.
Right.
So of course you can do free shipping and free returns. I'm the one buying it for 480, selling it for 599. I have to eat shipping and returns out of that. So now I just lost another $30. So now I went from making 120 to now I'm making 90. So now I'm making 20%, maybe, assuming everything else goes right. When you're up against the companies and stuff, it's just, and people, oh, I've always dreamed of owning a Golfster. I always say, careful what you wish for, because it's really, really tough. And you got to figure out other ways to do things and buy last year's or wait for it to go off map, and then you can really strike while the iron's hot. But you better have no debt. You better. So many things have to align. It's more difficult than people think.
Yeah, I've talked to several people in pretty recent, and it's pretty shocking to find out how, as a retailer like yourself or like a couple other guys I've talked to, and how they go, they're treated a little bit differently. And then on top of that, the company's selling it for the same price you have to sell it for. Or if like I talked to one guy and he goes to custom order a putter for a customer. That customer could technically get it faster if he ordered it from the company. And he said they make it so difficult. And then I've also learned, I don't know if you guys have the branding and how their emblems and stuff or their logos and stuff are shown on your website. And that, sometimes that has to be a certain way. And I don't think people quite respect the amount of hoops that you have to jump through. And I kind of wanted you to bring that up because a lot of people think that, well, I don't know why Bob, why can't they sell it for X amount, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, we're all held, everybody's held to some sort of standard.
Big time,
That's
big
just
time.
is what
So
it is.
Titleist and FootJoy in particular, they're about as cr Ping is the craziest. I think everyone's aware of that.
Right.
And then Titleist and FootJoy are the second craziest because they're so brand protective, which is fine. I'm all for brand protection. I understand that. I respect it. I get it. You built your brand from nothing into giant companies, right? Titleist dominates the ball count. They're strong in clubs, and FootJoy still is the strongest shoe company out there, and I get all that. But like, if you want to take a shoe from last year and it goes off price, there's like three or four different terms you can use. You have to pick one of those four, and that's the only way you can sell them. You have to put like previous generation or prior season You can't put like last year's closeout. You can't make it something that's like a derogatory term in their opinion. And you can't put like new low price. You can put like reduced price or cost savings. There's certain words you can use, certain words you can't. And it's like, dude, you guys are splitting hairs, but they have, I bet Titleist and FootJoy has more lawyers. Ping only has a couple because I know I'm on a first name basis, but Titleist and FootJoy, I think they have more lawyers than probably all the other companies combined would be my guess because I've talked to so many different people over the phone and like it's amazing how kind of crazy they are about it. I get it, but there's also kind of a point where it's like, come on, dude, like you have 4,000 golf bags left over from last year. Like, let's just sell them and move on. Do you think that selling the Players 4 stand bag in an ugly color is really going to damage your brand that bad? I understand what you're going for and what you're getting at, but I don't think you get like everybody going to just go, oh, Titleist bags are all cheap now? No, it's one bag from last year that was an ugly color that nobody bought. So like, if you got to make a bag 149, you got to make a bag 149. Like,
And
but
what
try explaining that to a lawyer that's probably some nerd that doesn't even golf, just sitting in a cubicle going, well, I got to follow the company's policy. You're talking to the wall.
I don't know, and you could stop me if this was me and you talking, but somebody was telling me that eventually they're big on just going blemished.
Yeah. There's a lot of companies, or refurbished. Yeah,
Yeah.
there's a lot of companies, especially electronic companies, that love to sell refurbished, put it in a cheaper box that doesn't have a colored picture on it, so the box costs them a couple bucks less, and go refurb, and then just let it rip as refurbished. And FootJoy did that for years with shoes blemished, and you're looking at the shoe going, "Where the hell's the blemish?
But I don't know
The
why
price
you,
is blemished. The
yeah,
shoe isn't."
I think that's the way to do it, and and say, hey, we're gonna let you go on these. You can't go under this price.
Yeah. Oh
We're
yeah.
gonna sell them as blemished or
We've.
repackaged or returned or whatever you have to do to protect your brand, but you
Exactly.
have all these pieces that you can sell and you
We've
can
had
make money
national
and they
sales
sell.
managers, presidents, CEOs. We've had the big bosses tell us, sell it as a salesman sample, sell it as a mint demo, sell it
Right.
as a factory return, sell it as the factory second, sell it this, sell it that. They just don't want it sold as new for a price that's way lower. Like, especially if the marketplace has a lot of them out in the world. Then they got to clean up a lot of problems. If you happen to come in and say new 249 when the price is 299, now everybody that has one is like, hey dude, how come Maple Hill is at 249 on this? Like, whereas
Right.
if we put salesman sample 249, they're like, oh, okay, they got they just got a handful of them, and then they can kind of brush it off as, yeah, Maple Hill's just got some that they're just selling off that they bought from the sales rep, and they can kind of turn a blind eye even though they know exactly what the hell's going on. So that has definitely happened before too, and they're like, they want you to play, and then some of it is like, they'll tell companies, like especially their national brands, like a Superstore or Galaxy or one of these big guys, they're like, all right, it's February 1st right now. On April 1st, MAP is coming off this product, so like they protect them, but only protect them for 60 days. So that basically tells those store managers, get rid of this product because the price is about to drop. Because
Right.
Maple Hill just bought all of them. So like 2 years ago when we did the Wilson Launchpad 2 irons, they protected it for like, I think it was 60 or 90 days because there was still product out in the marketplace that they didn't want to net down. So they made an announcement that like starting December 1st, or maybe it was Black Friday, I can't remember what the, it was an important date for us. December 1st, Black Friday, December 15, somewhere in there. MAP is coming off, but they give you like 60 days notice. So you have to move the stuff out, and then once that happens, we can take the gloves off and start selling it for what we actually want to, and still make a few bucks, but start moving volume because we needed to. We had thousands of sets, so that's how that game is played. I hope the listeners understand that. I
Yeah,
think they do.
I think they will, and I think it I think it helps for everybody to realize that and understand where your business lines up in the whole, ecosystem of
Yeah.
golf and golf
Yeah.
retail. But I got two questions left.
Fire, baby.
What role does the communities in your area play in the overall success of Maple Hill? And how has that helped over the years since you guys have been open? And what does it mean to you and to the Kitchen family to have these types of communities around you and around your business and around your family over the generations, basically?
Well, what do they mean to us? They mean everything. I mean, that's why we give so much back to the community, and I'm not just saying that. We literally
Right.
give so much back to the community. We donate to a ton of things and try to help a ton of different things, especially if it means something to somebody in the family, or if it's a local school or one of our employees has a kid going there or something like that. We try to do everything we can to help them without, giving away the farm. I've told my kids since they were little that with great success comes great responsibility, right? I think I've talked to you about this
Yes.
on the podcast before. I've always said, I want a lot out of life, so I feel like there needs to be balance. So if you're going to want a lot out of life, you have to give a lot, because I think the world needs balance. So I said I'm going to be real greedy in my life. I want to dominate. I want to own the golf market. I want to go out there and crush everybody under the sun. But if I'm going to do that, and I'm going to be successful, that also means that I need to give back a lot, right? So I need to, because there has to be balance. So we do what we can to help out with junior golf and help out with the first tee and local charities and organizations and school teams and school discounts and all those kind of things we can do. And what portion, and thank God too, Stevie, to make sure that I'm clear, is that we're fortunate in our little West Michigan community that we have a lot of kind-hearted people that are also loyal. I don't think that loyalty is bred into people too much anymore, with where the divorce rate is at and with where the world is kind of headed with short, quick gratification. Loyalty, I think, is somewhat out the window. I think that it still exists, like people that just are loyal to your podcast, right? They're like, oh, I love Two Dudes in One Cart. Steve does a great job and I love listening to it. And because you're putting your heart and soul into this, and people appreciate that. And we're lucky to be in a community where we have that. I don't think that necessarily, and I don't want to pick on anything, but like Los Angeles, I'm not sure that there's a ton of loyalty. If there's three or four golf stores there, I doubt too many of them, people are crazy loyal in these big cities. Like, whatever's closest to you, that's kind of where you're going, or whatever. Like, is maybe you got a buddy that works there, or something like that. Maybe you're loyal to your friend. But we have a community that's great, and we've also bred our customer into being loyal and also giving them no reason to leave. And I'll give you one quick anecdote, and then you can ask the last question. I had a guy in. I flew back from California on Tuesday. It was either Wednesday or Thursday. I was at work this past week, and the guy says, he goes, "Hey, can I talk to you real quick?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "You're the manager here, right? Or owner or something?" I says, "Yeah, I'm one of the owners." He goes, "I went to that new PGA Superstore," which Superstore opened up on the other side of town from us, probably 20 minutes away. He's like, "Very sterile environment, very kind of cold. They have lots of stuff in there, but it's like nobody's really that eager or willing to help you." He's like, "This is just a totally different atmosphere, and it's really warm in here, and everybody treats you like family, and it's just a completely different environment." And because I went in there because I was kind of driving by, and it's in a popular spot. It's where they usually put PGA Superstores, is in a
Right.
highly trafficked area. But he's like, "I'm never going back in there again. I absolutely love Maple Hill, and you guys just always do me right." And he was trading in a Ping driver and buying a Cobra Fairway Wood or something, whatever it was. And I was like, "Thank you very much for that compliment, sir." I was like, "We really work hard at that. We really try hard to, basically breed exactly what you're talking about." So that was really nice feedback. But that also means that the consumer is paying attention, right? And he actually, this was a little older guy. He's probably in his 60s, I'd say. But that was nice to hear, and I was like, it's working, like we're trying to do exactly, we're trying to foster that environment, and that's exactly what he picked up on. So
Well, Bob, here it is, the final question.
fire, baby.
Has there ever been a time in the last 15 to 20 years that Team USA and Team Europe have been closer in talent. Has there ever been a time you've been more concerned about getting a victory on our own soil? This may be the this to me, this is one of the ones I look at it and
Yeah.
I
Maybe
said,
after day one. Didn't we get our butts kicked in Detroit? I think we
no, we
got
got our butts
murdered.
kicked in Chicago, the miracle of Medina on the last day. But the
Okay.
I've had my struggles with the Ryder Cup this year. I've
Yeah.
always loved the Ryder Cup, but that whole
Yeah.
stink of the last one and getting paid and all this crap that's come about,
Yeah.
and it really makes me it's really made me think of why we've had such a dominance for so long,
Yeah.
but yet why we don't have the team atmosphere that Team Europe has, and why we don't look like we go out there and it looks like Team Europe wants to walk up to Team USA and do a unanimous kick in the nuts all at the same time. Like they have that vibe. Like
Yeah.
they're glue, and it seems
Yeah.
like we are not, that we have this arrogant independence and
Yeah.
we just assume we should win.
Well,
On paper, it looks like a half a stroke. You know what I mean? If that.
a little bit of that. I mean, like, what you have to look at what's happened to our country in the last, 4 to 12 years. Like, there's been a lot of division, and I think we keep pushing towards individualism, and I don't know if the patriotic feel is the same as it once was. And a little bit of that said, I think there's still patriotic feeling there. That's not the point. But I think sometimes when you're in Europe, and I went to Europe for the first time this year, and it's kind of a co-countrymen bond that everybody kind of has. Like, you're from Germany, I'm from France, but that's okay, and we're gonna still get along. Like, they're all bound by money because the euro is in most of those countries, not all of them, but most of them. And the camaraderie between it, like, it just felt different. When they talked about other countries, like, it'd almost be like somebody from Michigan, like somebody else say, like, all those backwoods people from Kentucky or something like that, and kind of pick on them, or like all the hillbillies that live in Florida, or all the gun toters from Texas, or the tree huggers from Oregon. Like, you can kind of rip on whomever. And I think that some of that, we kind of take it too serious. We kind of put these divisions in our head that don't really exist, that we should kind of just wipe out. And I don't think that Europeans necessarily have that. I think they have a little more worldly view and aren't quite so worried about themselves. Because it certainly seemed to me when I was in Germany about just how worldly all these people were, and how much respect they had for the US was incredible too. They're like, oh, the United States is the greatest country in the world, and all these things. I'm like, wow, okay, well, great. And glad, great. They were very happy to see us and all the things. And so, yeah, I'm going on Wednesday. I don't know if I told you that or not, but I'm going to Bethpage. I'm flying out.
Thanks, pal.
I'll be there Thursday and Friday. I'll be there Friday morning, and then I'm out of there. My son's homecoming is Friday, so my sons, both of them. So I have to come back for the actual golf part, but I'm going to be there for opening ceremonies and practice round and all that. So I just think it's a little different mindset between the Europeans and the Americans. But I think you're right what you said. But I think when push comes to shove, and when the going gets tough, you watch what happens in our country, and people start. We're all on the same team when you boil it all the way down, and we're all trying to beat the Europeans. And they'll put their differences aside when push comes to shove. Like, if you're in the military and you have different political views than the guy shooting next to you, but the opponent starts shooting at you, those political views don't mean jack squat anymore, right? You're just trying to take out that enemy over there, because now all of a sudden, none of that matters. We're just trying to save each other's lives. And I think that that's what's going to happen. And I think that is what happens. And I couldn't be any more proud of that. Like, when I think when push comes to shove, our country has been tested time and time again, and we get it right in the end. I think we kind of screw it up until we're put in our place, then we figure it out, and then we screw it up until we're put in our place and figure it out. And I think that these guys are young and battle tested, and I think it's going to be one hell of a battle, like what you said. I really do. And I nervous and scared that we lose. We've lost before. I mean, they've lost before. Everyone's lost before, but it's gonna be fun, and I love it. And the money part and all that stuff, I don't know. I think that a little bit of that is a little crybaby stuff. Like, even if they just said, all right, if you play in the Ryder Cup, you get $50,000, you get a whole bunch of free stuff or $100,000 or what. Just set a dollar amount. If you don't want to play, move your ass to the side. There's somebody right behind you that wants to play. Just and then we're gonna announce that you didn't want to play for the 100 grand we're gonna give you. To be fair, because then you could deal with the crowd after that. You know, like
Yeah.
that would be fair. If just say it up front, make it something reasonable, then go from there.
I think they should have just outed whoever it was that brought up getting the money and all this stuff, but I don't want everybody to think I want the US to win. I think this might be the hardest one to pick, and it's
Yeah.
on our soil. And I think we do come together as a team. I just think overall, if we were interested in golf and we sat down and said, hey man, this Ryder Cup things, you want to have some beers, come over, we might as well watch it. Looks like it's going to be a good show. I'm not really into golf, but, and then you sat there and watched everything coming up. And to that point, you were like, do these American guys ever even play together? The Europeans look like they have a
Right.
weekend game. Like they're all playing together every day. They're glowingly talking about each other. They constantly, they're constantly with each other. They're flying everywhere together. And I think that might have to do with the way there wasn't the money, in the European tour, even after DP bought it. So they're sharing flights, they're sharing car, and they had to come over here to make the money. You know what I
Exactly.
mean?
It's straight up apples and oranges. Plus, our country is so massive and 330 million people and all these things. Like, it's the United States is just so much different than anything in Europe because those countries are all very small. The population in some of them is still pretty high, but it's 330 million. I don't know if any countries in Europe have that many people in it. I'd have to look at the math, I guess, but it's just straight up apples and oranges, and like you said, the money that Americans get, and it's all individual, and everybody kind of feels like, well, I made this money and I earned this, and we're kind of all working for the same thing, dude. Like, if anybody out there doesn't thank Tiger Woods daily for what he did to make people more money, and then Mickelson made people more money, and Greg Norman fought for the LIV guys, and like, it's not just you know, everybody needs to take a little look in the mirror and go. Take a little piece of humble pie. Like, it wasn't just me that all of a sudden started making all this money. Like, there was people before me that, and Nicklaus laid the, and Palmer laid the
Right.
foundation for, you know, he made golf popular and fun, and he was a good looking guy and Arnie's Army. And then here comes Nicklaus who wants to kill everybody. And he started beating Palmer. Nobody likes him because he's a young punk. And then it kind of fell off for a little while there. Maybe, you know, you could say Watson and Norman and then here comes this black kid, Tiger Woods, and everybody's like, holy smokes, look at this guy, and open it up to all the races. So everybody has everybody in front of them to thank. And I think maybe the Europeans recognize that a little more too, you know, with the when they look at Ola Thabo and Seve Ballesteros and all these guys that went before them that were, you know, legit and laid the foundation. I think Americans lose sight of that sometimes. They're not quite as good at history.
Funny story, just to tell you what we're looking forward to. I watched a video. Actually on the Ryder Cup YouTube channel, and Tommy Fleetwood was playing. I think they played 9-hole match, him and Grant Horvat, and they're on one of the holes. And this is early morning. I think it was in August. It may have been earlier than that when they're playing it. And a guy's riding by on his 10 speed on the road, and he goes, "Hey, Tommy, I love you, but Scotty's gonna kick your ass in September."
There you go. And I think that's true. I think
Welcome to New
Americans
York.
in general, like if it was, let's just say, take the Americans out and let's just say just the Europeans are out there playing, I think Fleetwood would probably be at the top of the list for people cheering for him, right?
Oh,
I
yeah.
believe that.
Everybody loves that dude.
I think everybody likes Tommy Fleetwood. He's humble, he's polite, he's friendly. He's kind of everything that you'd like about someone. But he's got a little personality, so he's fun to watch. But then But then you put them on our soil, and then it becomes a us versus them kind of a thing. Like, okay, now we want to crush you. Like, now you're not on our team anymore, dude. Like, I still love you, but I'm gonna kick your ass, like you said. So that's and that's what made that's the beauty of it. And as long as nobody takes it too far, nobody takes it too serious. These are still everybody's life, and life is precious. So, I really think it's gonna be fun, and I'm pumped to go, man. I've been to Medina, I went to Oakland Hills, so this will be my third time. My first time in the city of New York. I've been near it, but not in it. And I'm taking my buddy Todd, and I'm pumped. So next time I'm on, I can talk to you more about the Ryder Cup and my experience in Bethpage.
Well, Bob, it's always great to have you on, and I don't really appreciate you rubbing it in about going to the Ryder Cup, but still wishing you a very happy birthday, and hope you go out this evening and have a good dinner with the family. And
Thank you. Yeah, we're leaving basically now. I gotta leave in about 5 minutes. So,
as always, we appreciate you coming on, and you have a good evening, sir.
thank you, my friend. Always a pleasure and an honor. So appreciate what you do, buddy. Thank you.